heard my mama cry. I heard her pray the night Chicago died. Brother, what a night it really was. Brother, what a fight it really was. Glory be. I heard my mama cry.
And welcome to the Poppin' Joe podcast, and truly a sad, sad day for our friends out there in Chicago. To my right, we have Joe the Franchise Narsa.
How are you, everybody?
And I'm Dario Pop Passarelli. And well, as the music said, what is happening today in the sports scene in Chicago, Joe?
You know what? Very, very tough day for everybody there in Chi-Town. I mean, you lost Derrick Rose, and I believe in less than, 14, 18 hours, you lost Patrick Kane. Reports coming out on Patrick Kane being out potentially 6 to 10 weeks with a broken collarbone.
It's sad. And you keep hearing it. It's not so much in terms of, you know, the play and what they bring, but these are exciting players to watch. And the league as a whole has lost people for the rest of the season, I think, on both their parts, or at least close enough for Kane. But you know, these are people that you'd actually pay money to go see because they are that exciting. Derrick Rose, you know, is one thing on TV, but if you had the opportunity to see him live and see how quickly he can get from one side of the court to the other, he just makes people look like they're standing still. Unbelievable player, and such a sad, sad story.
I know. I mean, when I watched Derrick Rose play for, I believe, his MVP year, I was sitting there thinking to myself, this is definitely my favorite player in the NBA. There was something about him that you could definitely see the type of aura around him where he was always trying to fight for his position no matter what. And even when he was putting up 40 points a game, it's not as if – it definitely looked effortless, but it didn't look like it lacked effort, if that makes any sense. He used to – he had the ability to take over a game in the same kind of physical nature that you would see Kobe be able to do, or a guy like Dwayne Wade at their height, where there was a lot of animosity there. And he has heart to his game, and it sucks that – that doesn't correlate to having great knees in his game.
Yeah, and you're right. First of all, it doesn't make sense what you said. But then again, watching Rose play, what he did didn't make sense either. He was just that phenomenal of a player. But Kane, you can't take anything away from him and what he's done for hockey. You go back to, was it that penalty shootout? Who are they playing against this weekend?
He's taken?
Less than a week ago where, I mean, he must have back and forth with the puck 50 times, and it looked like it was slow motion, and he still deked out the goal. Just phenomenal. And I don't know what they're going to do in Chicago, but they're probably going to be looking for some help.
Right. And I mean, I don't think there's a person that can really replace what you get in Patrick Kane. There's been moments that I think really define the type of player Patrick Kane is. I remember last year, I believe they were playing Dallas, and they scored a fantastic goal. Dallas scored a fantastic goal in the shootout. And they were skating by Chicago's bench on the way back and really celebrating and throw it in their face after a wicked goal against Crawford. And up next comes number 88, Patrick Kane, and he absolutely undressed Carey Lehtinen. I mean, when I mean undressed, I mean he started taking off his gear. And the face that Patrick Kane had after stopping on a dime, deking him out 6 times and going shelf was probably the ultimate, that was just my Wednesday night. You should see my Saturday.
No, just off Kane for a second, when you're talking about penalty shoot, it's like, who in the right mind is dumb enough to taunt the Chicago Blackhawks?
It happens, man.
I don't know what their success rate is. What I do know is that Taves, in yesterday's game, they did win in the shootout. Taves scored, I think, his record-breaking, I'm just ensuring that, but 40th shootout goal.
Yeah, what you're unsure about is technically there's no record, so he broke nothing. But yes, he got his 40th penalty shootout goal.
And so, I mean, the two of them together are phenomenal. And again, sad to see. And I heard already a name who might want to go to Chicago.
And that is?
Jágr.
Ah, old Jaromír Jágr.
Might be a good fit there. I don't know. Back with Hossa, you know, playing again. And but still, it's not Chicago's loss today. It's hockey's loss to see him go for the next 6 to 10 weeks.
For sure. I mean, the one thing I will say for having lost Patrick Kane, they might have somebody in their stable that can fit in Chris Versteeg. I think Chris Versteeg is constantly upped his game when he's worn a Blackhawks uniform. Other than that one season he had in Florida, and, I mean, you could argue his 30-40 games with the Leafs were pretty solid, but Christopher Stieg has talent to his game. He's got the speed to handle a front-line, second-line duty. My only worry with a guy like Yami Yager, in the great words of Don Cherry, would be that I don't think he can skate with that team. And if you're going to get Jaromir Jagr to sit on the power play, fine, but you're also losing a guy who's playing about 17, 18 minutes a game and who can skate with the best of them. And that's something that Jaromir Jagr can't do anymore, sadly. If he's on LTIR, all right, now stick with me here.
I'm sticking with you here.
And this has this is, by the way, a Maple Leaf-less podcast. Now, this is not going to become a conversation about the Leafs. However,
today, let me interrupt you there, Joe. We have officially declared Leafs free day.
Leafs free day.
And so, but what does Joe do within 5 minutes? He mentions Leafs. But anyways,
I mentioned the Leafs. But this is about a Chicago deal. If he's on long-term injury reserve and he's not going to be back until the Stanley Cup Finals, or sorry, the playoffs, when the cap numbers don't matter, can Chicago make a play for a scoring winger in Toronto?
I don't know.
A guy like Phil Kessel or Joffrey Lupo fit in the mold and maybe save them some cap restrictions in the future by trading away some older assets with some money and some picks?
So the trade would have to get done before the deadline.
Well, it would be that Patrick Kane would have to be put on long-term injury reserve, which would take his money off the cap.
Right.
Then if he were to come back in the playoffs, it wouldn't matter because there's no such thing as a salary cap, which would mean you could technically ice the team with Taves, Kane, Kessel, Sharp, Hossa, Versteeg as your top six.
Ooh. Seeing Kessel in a team with Jonathan Taves would be very interesting.
Right.
And I'll leave it at that.
Absolutely.
That would be very interesting
to see. But that's it. I'm sorry. I apologize. I didn't mean to. But that was for Chicago. It was not for Toronto.
Now, I mean, I'm looking at the standings right now. In the Western Conference, Chicago is currently in fourth. And they are about 9 points from falling out of the playoffs. I don't think there's any concern of them falling outside of the playoffs.
Me neither.
Right. And with the 6 to 10 week projected, again, this is very early to tell, what does that mean for his return? End of the first round? Second round, maybe?
Yeah.
Then you need time to get back in shape. That would be maybe a lot to ask for a Kane. But I do think that Chicago, like I said, I don't think it hurts them as much in terms of how they progress into the rest of this year. And I like the fact that, you know, whether it's somebody like a Jagr or whether it's somebody in-house like Versteeg, you know, they have options there. I don't think that they're going to be in that serious dire straits,
yeah.
Right? Again, we have to see how quickly, not so much he can recover from that injury, but how quickly he can get off, and not just game shape. We're talking playoff shape, because he's going to have very little time to get into it to help them push through the second, third, and hopefully Stanley Cup. But we'll have to see how that happens. I do think, however, that's a different story for the Bulls.
Right. I was just going to ask. I mean, where, after looking at the Chicago Blackhawks and both of us being comfortable in where they're going to be, and I mean, my notion on him making a big trade is if his numbers do come off the cap, you can even find yourself a defenseman. You can find flexibility if you put him on the LTIR. But regardless, it's not going to affect the Chicago Blackhawks as an organization. They're still going to be probably the number one or number two contender for the Stanley Cup, either out of the West or on a whole. But what does this mean again for the Chicago Bulls? They have a very solid foundation, and their offense, minus Derrick Rose, and their full team game is very solid without Derrick Rose. But with Derrick Rose, it puts them in a very enviable position. I mean, looking at the numbers, the Bulls this year have been 7-4 without him. And I'm pretty sure that over the last couple years, they've been at around a 500 record, if not a little under. So, like you're saying, where can we see the Bulls now without a guy like D. Rose?
Well, let's go back to, September, October, when we saw LeBron go back home and We had an idea in terms of the teams in the Eastern Conference. I think people
said... So you want Jordan back?
I didn't say that far.
Oh, okay. I'm just saying, like, you're asking... September. You're talking about guys going home. I'm saying this guy...
September.
Oh, okay.
Well, you're talking about guys going back. Let's talk about KG. I mean, hey, LeBron went home. I'm going back home. Right.
KG stole Wiggins' house. That's what he did. He just wanted... He wanted a new poster for Adidas.
Here, Mr. Kevin Garnett, when you say you went home, what you really meant to say is... No contending team wanted you.
Basically.
That's what I said. So, but getting back to the beginning of the season, I think everybody went in it as a two-horse race. Cleveland, Chicago is going to be first or second overall. You know, we expected Cleveland to need some time to gel together. And we figured Chicago, it was how much can Derrick Rose play? Because Derrick Rose is going to be the key in all of this. Nothing has changed in my eyes. Rose is still the key. And if Rose is not there, they're going to have a tough time scoring. Yes, they're 7-4, but right now, altogether, they're 36-21. It's a bit of a difference from being just, over 500 to being a 600 team. Are they a playoff team? Oh, yeah, they're a playoff team. But right now, I think Chicago falls back. And is in part of that big pack of Atlanta, Toronto, Washington. Even though, Atlanta went on that crazy, absolutely crazy run where they played such beautiful basketball. Everybody's still feeling for them that they're going to come back down to earth. And we just have to wait and see in terms of what happens there.
See, I do disagree, though, in lumping Chicago in with the Torontos and the Atlantas of the Eastern Conference, because the one thing I do think that puts Toronto ahead of Chicago without Derrick Rose is that Toronto, this is their game when healthy or injured. Chicago tends to change in the sense that they have to accommodate a superstar when he's in the lineup. And I don't mean that in a negative term of phrase. I mean that you're going to have to sit there and you're going to have to realize that your game is going to flow a lot differently. They are going to play more of that team game going into the playoffs than I think they're necessarily built to do so, because you have a guy like Derrick Rose. And they're going to develop the issues that I think the Toronto Raptors have been having over the last little while, or even so in the last couple years, where who is taking that shot? Who is the guy who's going to win you the game? It's not necessarily going to be a guy like Joakim Noah, because a lot of the times you don't have the big man taking the shot that you need to win. Are you comfortable in having somebody that's not Derrick Rose take that shot? And can your team understand how to play in those situations? For me personally, going into this playoffs, I would have said Chicago would have been my probably second, if not first, because there's something... I have a feeling that if you meet Cleveland early, you could definitely knock them out. I don't think they've completely gelled yet. And playoff basketball is very different for two guys like Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love.
That's a good point.
But so that's why I was kind of feeling like Chicago is maybe a little bit more pampered in this. Sorry, not pampered, but also a little bit more seasoned to go into the playoffs as maybe the number one horse in the East. But looking at them now, I would definitely put them one peg underneath the Raptors. And I would say you're looking at Cleveland, the Raptors, then you're looking at your Chicago, your Atlanta. And not to say that I think the Raptors could even beat Chicago, because that's a very scary matchup.
No, and here's, I'm looking again at the standings. Right now, Toronto's in second. They are a game ahead of Chicago.
Right.
Chicago's in third, and Chicago is half a game ahead of Cleveland.
Sure.
And then Washington is 2.5 games behind Cleveland then. Is it going to stay that way?
But, well, I mean, the one thing you
For the standings, Chicago going to stay in third, or are they going to drop?
I think the Raptors and Chicago could potentially drop and have Cleveland come up on them.
And Atlanta?
I don't know whether Atlanta can hold on to the first place, so you could maybe... I could envision, based on a hot streak, the way LeBron and company have been playing, you could see a Cleveland... maybe Atlanta / Toronto, depending on how the season continues off, then a Chicago, and so on.
I see Chicago dropping off. I see Chicago falling down. I think Atlanta, with a 7.5 game lead, that might be too much. There's, 25 games left, something like that. That might be too much for anybody to catch them. Toronto, being part of the Titanic division, they're going to have enough games where they're going to have easy enough to make up ground. I don't think they're going anywhere. But from the beginning of the season, especially for our, you know, I say our Toronto Raptors, but the Toronto Raptors, it's never been about the season. You know, we'd figured we'd finish ahead on the Raptors would finish at the top of the Atlantic Division. We knew they'd be in the top four. Most important thing for the Raptors is going to be the playoffs. Out of all those five teams that we just mentioned, I still say Chicago plays the best playoff basketball, mm-hmm. with or without Rose. And that scares me more than anything else. You know, I would rather face Atlanta, would rather face Washington. I'm saying that and as a Raptor fan, and I'm saying that even though we've beat, I think, both of those teams three games to one. So we've had a pretty good record against them. But, you know, we're struggling against Cleveland, and we haven't beaten Chicago. And I don't want to face them in the playoffs.
Right. I mean, the other thing, though, is since you feel that Chicago is going to drop off a little bit in the regular season, and I also agree, I think in my wise wisdom, that the Toronto Raptors missed out on a very big chance and a very big opportunity in standing pat. Now, looking back on it, having a team like Chicago lose a star. Because what you have done is you have now made yourself even with the Chicago Bulls in the sense of the game you're going to be playing. And like you're saying, the fear is that Chicago is more seasoned in that type of system in the playoffs. And the Raptors had some opportunities.
What?
Well, I
what
mean,
opportunities?
I heard that West was an opportunity for the Raptors. I'm not going to sit here and say that I had my finger on the pulse, but there's no way that there wasn't moves to be made that could have made this team better, and it would have mortgaged maybe a little bit of the future. But when you look at the Eastern Conference, do you really want to give Cleveland another year to play together? Do you really want to allow Derrick Rose to come back and be healthy again and potentially play a full season? I don't know if he can, but if he does...
We can't. I mean, we have to leave Rose out of the equation.
Sure.
Because nobody knew that. I mean, even with Rose and his history of injuries, you can't play the card to relax in it. West, to me, I don't think West would be enough to push him over the top. The only move that actually I would have seen been interested in doing, and it's not going to go along your lines, but I think it helps the Raptors, is if they could have found a way to get the Manimal freed. And the reason why I say that, because, you know, if you're a Raptors fan, selfish reasons, not only do you get an improvement, but you also make Denver worse. And considering that in 2016, the Raptors have the New York's pick or Denver's pick, whichever one's worse,
yeah.
If you can make Denver worse,
might as well take it.
Might as well take it, right? It almost helps both ways there. That was the only thing. I was actually going back to the trade, hoping that Denver would, you know, get rid of more of its players, but unfortunately they didn't.
So you're comfortable thinking that this Raptors team, you could look back on it saying they missed a big opportunity?
No, because I don't think the Raptors, let me stop there, missed a big opportunity for what?
To potentially make a NBA championship.
Okay.
The Eastern Conference, well, stick with me here. Where are the Miami Heat right now in the Eastern Conference?
They're in eighth spot?
Eighth spot. Where were they?
Seventh. Sorry.
Seventh. Where were they last year?
They were first.
Yeah. Who is the number one team in the league? In the Eastern Conference.
Last year?
No, this year.
Atlanta.
In what world does that make any sense? Other than you have one team that was so solid last year with great superstars dropping off because now their team is out of it, losing LeBron. Dwayne Wade is always hurt. He's not the same player he once was. And obviously, like, the sad news with, like,
Chris Bosh.
Yeah. I mean, as a fan of Chris Bosh, like, I hope he gets better. And even as a person, I mean, he was a nice guy.
Yeah, definitely.
What I'm saying
is...
Shout
out to Chris Bosh.
Yeah, 100%. But what I'm saying is that I felt like the Eastern Conference seemed weak from the get-go. And I even remember a lot of projections still had the Raptors in the top three. Top three is interesting because their division, you knew they were going to get a 1-4. You knew they would sit into the four spot. But when I saw guys thinking that they could be in two or three, and seeing what Cleveland wasn't able to do early on until they started gelling, I really think that this is one of those times where the Eastern Conference is probably at its weakest. And it only takes a stroke of luck and some hard work, right? And I think that's something that we also saw last year in the Toronto Blue Jays when we were sitting there saying, are you seriously going to let a year where the Boston Red Sox and the New York Yankees are absolutely terrible and you're not going to go and insulate this team and they're only two games back? So to me, it feels like a little bit of the same argument. I thought that the East was weak in the first place, and I thought if the Raptors could make the right move, it would probably help them in the long run, and they could potentially get somewhere that they've absolutely never been to.
I disagree with you, and I disagree with you on this basis. The first year that the Big Three arrived in Miami, what did they do?
They went to the finals and then lost.
Yeah, they lost in the finals. Do you think the Toronto Raptors, as they are now, are better, the same, or worse than the Indiana Pacers were 2-3 years ago with a healthy Paul George? What I'm saying is I don't believe that anybody's going to touch Cleveland. I don't think, no matter what, I don't think anybody's going to touch Cleveland even during this first year. I think they're going to make it through.
See, what I think is your comparison to a team like Cleveland and a comparison to a team like Miami, you're missing two big variables. Dwayne Wade was a champion by that point.
A one-time champion with Shaq.
Right, but a one-time champion with Shaq. And LeBron James had been to a championship and lost. And he had done that all on his own with a team that was not fantastic.
My point exactly.
Right. This team is built with arguably one of the toughest attitude players. Sorry, one of the worst attitude players in Kevin Love. A lots of times selfish point guard who hasn't been there at all in Kyrie Irving. You don't have two guys that have really been there. You don't have the same things that make Chicago a solid playoff team built into Cleveland. Now, I don't disagree that Cleveland is probably going to come out of this Eastern Conference, but what I do disagree with is that I don't believe that they're seasoned enough. And I feel like if there's one team that you can knock out early, it's the Cleveland Cavaliers. Because other than LeBron James, I don't see many other the key contributors knowing what it's going to be like. And the Toronto Raptors, although they got, had their hearts broken last year, they were able to understand and learn from it. And I believe that that little bit of playoff experience for the whole roster would be a very big benefit in comparison to the type of, you know, playoff knowledge that you have in the Cleveland Cavaliers.
What I see happening moving forward with the Cleveland Cavaliers, not so much the team that they had when they started the season in October, but the team they have now. You've added pieces. Mozgov, JR. Pieces that, on their own, aren't much. Mozgov is going to give you defense. JR can give you scoring. And I'll tell you right now, you look up and down that lineup, there's only one all-star that's going to make it all work, and nobody's talking about him, and that's Blatt. That head coach is a phenomenal X's and O's. And right now, he just doesn't have a superstar in LeBron. He's got all these little pieces. Nobody studies the game better than he does. People aren't familiar in terms of what the miracles that he's done across Europe and across the European championships there. He'll find the way. He always has. He's been a winner in every league he's ever played in or coached in. He's going to find a way. Cleveland Cavaliers are making it to the finals. Cleveland Cavaliers have an excellent chance of winning the championship this year. Now, if you believe that, which is a bit of a long shot, you know, there are other things, you know. You still have the Western Conference to deal with. But if you go on that premise that Cleveland, yes, for the next 2-3 years, are your Eastern Conference champions representative, then I'm going to agree with Masai and say, now may not be the time. Let's see what happens in 2 years and how Caboclo is. Let's see what happens in 2 years when we get our first-round draft pick. DeRozan will be a little older. Might have to trade him off for a younger asset. I think Masai is looking more 4 or 5 years of having that championship team rather than looking at it within the next two. Smart, though. We need playoff experience. He's bringing it on. I'm glad he didn't get rid of T. Ross right away. I'm not sure if he's, you know, going to be that starter that we've always hoped, but I think he can be an effective piece to the puzzle. If you give him an opportunity to grow, like we did with DeRozan over the first 4 or 5 years, picking up, you know, a new trick in his arsenal every year. So let's look at the next 2 years. Let's be as competitive as heck. Let's go into the playoffs. Let's, you know, do as much as we can and make it to the second round and get that kind of experience. But I think that championship team, still looking at 4 or 5 years down the road. Once LeBron has started coming down. Oh, quick note about LeBron that I read yesterday. He's telling schools to stop offering his 10-year-old son scholarships.
Because he wants him to go straight to the NBA out of high school.
But schools are offering his 10-year-old kid scholarships already.
Doesn't want him.
Oh, jeez, unbelievable.
You know what? I mean, I guess we'll have to agree to disagree, because that's one thing I've always found interesting with the hardcore Raptors fans. There's so much patience there, and at some points, patience doesn't always pay off. I mean, if we're just going to wait for LeBron to go away, then are we going to wait for Durant to go away? Then are we going to wait for, you know, Wiggins to come here or go away?
Oh, yeah, I didn't even forget about that. Wiggins coming home. That's the other point.
The thing is, I thought that allowing a team to develop is probably the worst thing the Raptors could do in waiting for, in kind of giving Cleveland their chance at, on the podium. And I think the one thing that this team has is they don't give anybody too much credit. And if that's a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know yet. But
we have to wait and see.
We'll have to wait and see. However, I thought they could have done something. They didn't, but we'll see what they do. I mean, they did surprise us once before. They surprised us this year with their fantastic record, fantastic start. Can they surprise them in the playoffs? If there's one team in this town that can, I think it's the Toronto Raptors.
Well, you want to talk about surprising? I agree with you wholeheartedly there. Let's change weather a bit.
I am so down to change weather.
Let's change Not weather a bit, a bit.
Give me like 40 degrees difference.
And are you expecting a surprise from the Blue Jays this year, considering that the pitchers and catchers have showed up at spring training?
You know, I don't think I do. I think last time we were talking about this, I had them pegged maybe second or third in the division. I think it was third in the division. I don't believe the Blue... I feel what the Blue Jays are going into this season with is too much hope and too much well-wishing. I haven't heard about Daniel Norris as much as I have in the last 6 weeks over the couple of years since he's been drafted. I think he was drafted 2 years ago. The Jays are going into this season with a very young rotation, a questionable bullpen at best, a very telling question mark in the back two portions of the field in center and left, a only defensive second baseman, and Jose Reyes with 19 errors last year. Now, I don't mean to be doom and gloom, because...
But you are.
I am.
You are.
But what I feel like people are forgetting is that about 4 years ago, or 3 years ago, the Blue Jays were looking at a core group of four pitchers. And out of those four, you got one. It was Romero, it was Morrow, Drabek, and Hutchison. What did you get out of those four? Hutchison. Going into this year, you're going in with a three or four of Stroman, Norris, Sanchez, and the newly acquired Estrada from the Adam Lind trade. Do you think that you could have all of them or two of them flourish? I mean, to have this team get to the 90-something wins they need, everything needs to be on point all game. All year with those young guys.
And we know for a fact that it won't be. But, you know, I go into this year on a different level than I did the past couple. A couple years ago, we had the trade.
Right.
The Blue Jays made all these, know, big moves, and we are looking at the Jays being contenders.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's excitement. And every time the Jays lost or got hurt or lost or got hurt, that sinking feeling crept in more. Last year, going in, was almost the same.
It was timid.
That expectation was, you know what, it doesn't look good. We don't have anything. This year, I find it almost in the middle. There is dread still because the holes that we needed to fix at second base, reliever, shortstop, haven't been addressed. But there's this new crop of young blood, and youth always brings excitement and anticipation. And now I'm looking forward. I'm looking forward to the games. I'm looking forward to see if they win. I'm looking forward to see, you know, if they lose, how it's not the end of the world as it was 2 years ago. So I'm going in there probably at a more even keel. Not like Russell Martin. I think Russell Martin can make the young pitchers better just by his presence.
Do you think he can catch the knuckleball all year? Because Ari Dickey thinks he can.
Yes.
Oh, you
do. In answer to your question, yes, I think he can catch it. But that's not the right question.
Okay.
Can Russell Martin catch a knuckleball well?
That's true.
That I don't know.
That's true. If he can, the one thing I will say for you on the sunshine end of the baseball talk, because I am definitely the dark, swampy marshland nobody wants to touch.
That's usually my job, too, by the way.
I know. I mean, we've switched positions. It's almost like I've went through the crash of 1913 like you did. But, sorry. But you...
I was late 20s when the crash. Was the 30s?
It? Yeah. Oh, okay.
Not 13. It was the 30s.
Oh, so that was the Titanic vividly. Then.
Yes.
That was 1912, though. Anyway, sorry. I digress. When you have... two catchers instead of your three, or I mean, at one point I think they were carrying four. You empty out a spot, and could that spot allow you to fill another area you need help in and kind of beef up the platoons that you'll need to make a more solid bullpen or a more solid second base system, or, you know, give Dalton Pompey a little bit of breathing room? I'm really afraid for Dalton Pompey.
There's so many questions that, and you're right. The team that takes to the field in April isn't going to win you a playoff game. Isn't going to get you to the playoffs. But they have to keep it close enough so that by trade deadline, they can use some of those extra pieces that they have and make a better, well-rounded team to compete. And I think they might have a piece here and there. And look, Alex Anthopoulos, this is his year, or he's going to get canned. Everybody's been saying it. And the moves he makes from now till trade deadline will determine whether or not he's sticking around.
Now, I read something interesting. Bob Elliott talked to Adam Lind. And Adam Lind said something very damning. And he said, for guys that think the core has changed, it hasn't. Because the players that were moved out weren't the core. Jose Bautista is the voice of that team. And the core, if the core hasn't been touched, I am afraid in the Toronto Blue Jays, they have the same sort of mentality as another unnamed organization in this city, that a six-game slide really hurts them, and they almost tend to feel like it's never gonna stop. I mean, in 2 years in a row, they had both a fantastic winning streak and a horrendous losing streak, and I believe they almost came back to back. So their highs are very high, but their lows are very low. It's interesting, though, like you're saying, with the guys they've introduced, will that change? Because I've had a lot of criticism for Jose Bautista in the sense that his plate appearance, not necessarily the actual statistics he gets out of it, but he used to whine a lot, he used to complain a lot, and I felt like that was something that kind of, you saw Brett Laurie ingesting, you saw Aaron Sebia ingesting, you saw a lot of the younger guys have that tough attitude when it came to getting struck out, And maybe if they just put their head down and walked away, the next time they wouldn't have got punched out. But I'm interested. I'm definitely interested to see if the newer guys coming in can change.
It would be interesting. And I think that's going to be a lot on Russell Martin's shows. But you know, you mentioned earlier about the similarities between an unnamed. Oh, sorry. Just being handed something here from producers. Late breaking news. That unnamed team, Leafs still stink. Thank you. But no.
We should have the breaking news sound for that one. Nobody knew about that.
But still. No, it is an up and down. And I think there's going to be a lot on Russell Martin's shoulders to try and bring the clubhouse together. And, you know, does he deserve to have that kind of credit being the new person in? I don't know. Will he have the group led by Joey Batts come in? I don't know. Those are questions, and those are things that we have to keep an eye out for and see what happens as they progress. Do they have the ability to be in the number one spot? I think they do. I think they can be a playoff team. I think there's still a couple of changes that need to be made. But the hope is there. And right now, at a very long 162-game schedule, hope is what you need.
Well, they're in first right now.
So is everybody else.
But they are. But the Blue Jays are in first in the league right now.
In the league?
In the whole league.
Okay. Then pray tell, Mr. Brainy Pants, who is in second place in the league right now?
Everybody else.
Okay.
So we're good right now.
We're good right now?
That's how I'm going to look at the season start. Oh, well, so we hope they play in the cold weather is what we're saying.
Oh.
Right?
No. See, now you brought up cold weather.
Is that not a good thing? They play in October?
No. It's starting again, Joe.
Uh-oh.
It's starting again. You brought up cold weather.
I guess he's getting right again.
It's time for Pop's Rant.
Look at me when I'm talking, son.
You can argue with me, but you can't argue with figures. Two half-nothings is a whole nothing. And I know what I'm talking about for cold weather.
Cold weather. Cold weather is for what, Joe?
Winter?
Yes. Hockey?
Yep.
Basketball?
Yep.
You know what cold weather is not for?
Joe.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
It's not for soccer. However.
Sorry, David Woodbridge.
My rant is for probably the most. And I'm going to have to be careful here. Because careful what I say. Professional journalist, Joe. I am. So I have to be very careful. So I'm going to understate it. To Mr. Sepp Blatter, the most despicable dictator in the world today. How is that for underselling?
Seems pretty good for me.
Okay. There is hours and hours of things that I can talk about in terms of what this man and the FIFA organization has done. And I'm not going to get into all of it because there really is so much. Whether it's, you know, saying that women should wear shorter shorts, whether in Qatar 2022 saying that, you know, there's anti-homo sexual laws there. He's saying, well, maybe men should just not have sex. His comments are bewildering that this man has not been sent to jail. The bribery allegations for not only Qatar, but for Russia, which, you know, they tried to do an investigation, an internal FIFA investigation on whether or not Russia had corrupted. And they went to do a search on their computers, but they said that, oh, we leased those computers and those computers are destroyed now. So the final verdict was, since we don't have any information, evidence, we can't prosecute anybody.
Sounds legit to me.
This organization, which has $1 billion in reserve for a non-for-profit organization.
Right. Well, what do you think Sepp Blatter getting paid?
$1 billion can go into countries like Brazil, who have laws stating that you're not allowed to sell alcohol at a soccer game because of deaths. Kind of important. And they come down and say, nope. Sorry, I do not wish to be arrogant, but FIFA will just not comply with this. And guess what? Because Budweiser is a sponsor. Thank you.
Thanks. That was good. I like that.
They went ahead and they were allowed to sell beer. South Africa, where you have a situation where love this. You have two South Africans on Thursday get charged for robbing some of the tourists that came in. Got arrested on Thursday went to trial and charged on Friday and had a 15-year sentence start on Saturday.
Wow.
And they don't pay taxes wherever they go. There's an estimated $300 million that the Brazilian government gave up to host the Olympics.
The World Cup.
Not like they needed the money.
No,
right? Brazil doesn't need the money.
I know.
But, I mean, it's absolutely astonishing how this man can get away with so much and be a buffoon and, worse, be so arrogant as to not care.
Here's my question, though. If Qatar had gotten the World Cup without the stigma behind it as...
It wouldn't.
Well, I'm just saying if it had. Let's be theoretical here. Hypothetical. I don't know my theticals, all right? So stick with me, people. But
I'm still sticking with you, Joe. I always do.
Thanks, man. If Qatar had gotten the World Cup fair and square, if that had been, you know, something that FIFA had said, you know what, we haven't done this before, and you know what, there's always problems in that area. Who cares? We're going to go there and bring some joy, bring some soccer, and we believe that they actually won, and they actually did. Would you be as upset that the World Cup got moved to the winter?
Not so much in terms of upset about the winter. I'm upset that it's still there. I'm upset that it's still there because they've already had 1,200 deaths in building these cathedrals of stadiums. And they estimate by the time this World Cup will actually take place, there will be between 4,000 and 5,000 deaths. So, yes, I'm upset that it's still there, whether there's any wrongdoing or not, whether it's been moved from the summer to the wintertime. And, again, let's put Qatar out of the equation for a minute. And, you know, it's the arrogance. Sepp Blatter is now coming to all the European leagues, all the, you know, South American leagues and saying, I know this is in the middle of your season, but this is how it's going to be.
Well, it's only conflicting one
period.
League, apparently.
Which league?
I think they said France, if I'm not mistaken.
No, it's actually compete with a lot more. Plus, I mean, they do have that break.
Yeah.
Now you're asking soccer players to play in the league and for their country straight through without that break in the middle?
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have to. You know, and that's the whole thing. It's he is so intent on, you know, fitting that square peg into a round hole that he uses everybody else's forehead to smash it in there.
Yeah, I mean, FIFA's done a lot of crazy things in the last little while, and it's been tough to condone a lot of stuff they did. I mean, I'm not for it. I was just kind of playing devil's advocate there. I was against it in the sense that my family's from the Middle East, like from Iraq, and I just don't feel like it's a very ingenious place to put the world's greatest, some would argue the world's greatest sporting stage. And to have it in a place where you have a lot of violence, you have a lot of calamitous things that could happen, I thought maybe it was better suited to be pushed farther away from there. However, I don't mind the winter thing, only because by then, all the Toronto teams will be winning multiple championships, and we'll be busy in the summer, right? Like, you know, we have parades. I can't even sell that to the guy who's on the show.
Sorry,
I tried so hard.
Blinking here.
Think about
disbelief.
It. What, that'll be, hey man, 20-somethings. The 2020-somethings.
Oh, no.
We'll
actually,
all be winning championships.
I get it now.
You said Masai Ujiri will make his move in 2020. Or 5 years from now.
You're absolutely right.
So we'll get a Raptors championship?
The only thing that I thought was that whatever you're smoking, we're going to have after the show, not before.
No,
that's just my bad.
I can't do it in here.
My
we'll
bad.
Find out.
My bad. Toronto and championship in the same sentence. He nearly made me fall out of the chair there.
Well, here's hoping that 2022 brings a TFC championship, a Raptors championship, a Blue Jays start after a championship, and the unknown team. I don't know. I don't think they will do it. But maybe. Thanks for tuning in to the Pop and Joe podcast. I am Joe Franchese Narsa.
And I am Dario Pop Passarelli. Be good, boys.
Stay warm.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. Man, it doesn't show signs of stopping, and I brought me some corn for popping. The lights are turned way down low. Let it snow, let it snow. When we finally kiss goodnight, how I'll hate going out in the storm. But if you really